It is our February edition of PMC Live. I'm your host, Angela Denning. PMC Live airs the first Thursday of every month at 12:30. We check in with leadership at the Petersburg Medical Center to see what's happening over there. Today, I'm joined in the studio by CEO Phil Hofstetter, Kirsten Testoni with Home Health, leading the Home Health Department over there, and Jill Dormer. We don't want that music. That's not you. Tell me your title again.
I'm the Chief Information Officer.
Okay, Chief Information Officer. Okay. So what should we talk about today? I'd love to get just a general update. And are we getting Liz on the phone?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
Just checking if Jill's mic is on now.
Oh, she's on mic 4.
Let's try something else.
There we go.
Oops, not yet.
We'll get you on here, Jill. We want to hear from you today.
She's okay not reporting.
You're okay with our mic not
working.
Always,
good with it.
Well, sorry.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah, now you're on. Thank you, Joe. If we could get kind of a general update with PMC before we jump into other specifics.
Yeah, I mean, I'll cover the main topics, obviously, with our COVID situation and update. Obviously, we're watching our Omicron situation within Petersburg. We're pretty much on a vigilance pattern. We haven't seen a huge surge. We have cases, and we're monitoring those quite a bit. And we can talk a little bit about airport testing, since that contract has gone away with the state, and we can provide an update to the community. We are going to continue with some of that testing. And then I also want to let the community know about an update related to a presentation on March 24th, where we'll have a board meeting and we'll have an opportunity for a search to present to our board on that date. So I just want to make sure that there's some awareness out in the community about that.
Okay, yeah, search on March 24th. Do you know what the presentation will be about?
Yeah, we've been talking with their leadership, and just there's been some interest in the community on exactly what search is proposing and what the leadership is interested in and how we can collaborate and work together. And so the some of the details of that will be worked out from now until then, and we'll have some information going forward.
Okay, but no spoiler, no major merger.
No, nothing like that. You know, we obviously are very, very excited about, being PMC and being a community hospital for the community. And that's something we're very interested in retaining. And, I think there was a desire from the community to understand exactly search is willing to provide. And that's really sort of provide an opportunity through a board meeting to do that.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure people are interested. There's been kind of quote unquote search takeovers in other towns. That's maybe not the right term, but community hospitals that have decided to stop serving and then search has come in and taken over.
Yeah. I mean, again, focus and the board's focus in the hospital mission really is about, it's a community hospital, and how can we work and partner with organizations and entities also in working together. And that's really the idea and the focus, and making sure that we have good transparency in all those opportunities, and then also good information. And so right now we're just in an information stage as far as that's concerned.
Okay. All right. So again, that date, March 24th, for that presentation with search. Airport testing.
Yeah, I had Jill up here. She is our chief information officer, but she also did a lot of, on an incident command, she did a lot of the airport testing. She was there from the beginning as far as providing that when we used to even have it at the airport. And then when we moved it into our facility, and then now when we're, the funding is pretty much downsizing quite a bit, or actually going away. So what are we going to do, and what's the process?
Yeah, no, travel testing has been one of my special COVID jobs in the last year and a half. And it was, we were happy to work with the state, and specifically Sandy Dixon has been wonderful to work with at the borough, popping up the airport testing at the airport campus, providing that, bringing it down to campus when it started to wind down a little bit. And now that the state funding has ended on January 31st, as a small community hospital, we're working creatively to find ways to offer that at no cost to the community for as long as we can, that it's feasible. And so we're trying to keep it standard. The community really at this point, for the next week or so or a few weeks, as long as we can, they shouldn't notice any difference. Like, you would come to the ER entrance after getting off your flight and receive your testing. Your result would go into your portal through Cerner, and which we talk about later on in this call. And then there really is no charge. Everything stays pretty standard, and we'll try to maintain that as long as we can.
One thing that we are adding, through the contract, we're able to obtain some funding for antigen tests. So the home kits have been obviously wildly popular. It gives the opportunity for people to test for COVID in their homes and everything. But also through that contract, we were able to purchase some home kits for that station, that ER station. So if they come in, there's the opportunity to get a home kit as well. And if they require a PCR test, we'll also do the PCR test. This is all pending how much, if we have a huge surge or a huge outbreak, this might change, you know. So while we can do it, we can absorb it into our operations, we're going to try to continue as much as possible. But all bets are off as far as if there's a huge surge, we might have to transfer some of our processes. So the state lab is maybe processing that, which the turnaround time for that is a little bit longer. And then we might have to hand out the home kits as well. And those will be the two processes. Right now we can do the PCR test in-house. And it's a pretty nominal cost internally. So we can try to continue that, provided that the numbers are not, through the roof. We might have to change things around if that's the case. And we might also have to request some funding from the borough if we want to continue that and continue that as a free service. So,
and information for testing on campus or receiving the over-the-counter home kits is all available on our website also, which is at pmcak.org.
Okay. Kirsten, you're an RN.
I am.
What can you kind of talk about the home test kit versus the PCR? And because what I'm getting is there's just so much that has changed with the pandemic over the last couple of years, and with it, the funding's happened and the resources. And I remember there was a time where, we didn't have vaccines. There was a shortage of masks. There was a shortage of tests, and everything was shut down pretty much because we didn't have any resources. And now that's all changed. It seems like people almost have it at home, including these home test kits. These home test kits are so widely available. Do you think they're accurate and effective?
I do. I think that they're accurate for people who truly have COVID, people who are smack dab in the middle of their infectious period. From personal perspective, I actually tested several times on a home kit before I tested positive when I was visiting down south. I think it's important for people to follow up with a PCR if they have a positive home test, because it definitely clarifies things for you. They're a little less sensitive, but they really do work. And I just love the fact that PMC is making them so available to people. Again, I traveled down south fairly recently, and it was very hard to get a test anywhere. And here we are so fortunate that PMC is supporting this, that the tests are readily available to people, and people should use them.
Yeah, that was my experience traveling down south for Christmas, too. I had family in Kansas, family in Arizona, and it was nothing like here. I had a sister who was a close contact, and she was, where do I get a test? It's just like, she was kind of exposed, but she wasn't sure how to test. And that was in Flagstaff. But so, yes, you can pick them up at several places in town. And you are caring for people in their homes and probably doing a bunch of tests. Are you kind of giving out these kits and
So from home health, no, we don't give them out. But what we do is we will do home testing for people who cannot get out to get to the lab. So our nurses will go in, they'll do the PCR testing, bring the sample back to the lab for resulting. And that works really well for folks, especially folks who can't get out. Or we've done people who have small children at home, have sick children at home. It's not necessarily limited to people who are on home health service. It's just something that we've offered to the community because we are mobile and we're out in the community anyway.
How have you seen that change over the past year with COVID? You know, there's been three, we've gone through three variants.
We honestly, it's impacted us in the sense that sometimes we're much busier than we would normally be. But I think our nurses, my nurses never stopped going out and seeing patients. We might have changed our protocols a little bit. We might wear more PPE. I know you came out with me that time. And so you kind of saw what we do and how we need to prepare to take care of COVID people. But our business didn't stop. You know, we just keep plugging along. And it's great that we are so closely connected to PMC because we can offer these things. You know, if somebody needs a lab draw and they, again, not on our service, but they need that, and they just can't get out, or they're afraid to come in because they're immunocompromised and they need, they want to really stay at home. You know, we are able to get out and get into people's homes and provide really great service for PMC and also for home health.
With Omicron, you know, we touched on, we haven't had a huge, a recent surge here in town that's been, that people have gotten really sick from as far as I know, but I've heard other towns haven't been as lucky. There have been even little kids that have had interesting symptoms. Are you aware of these, like it's maybe presenting differently than other variants?
It hits hard and it hits fast. And I think that's my experience, both professionally and personally. One day you feel fine, the next day you're like, wow, what just hit me? I'm going to speak to vaccines. We're seeing people who are testing positive for COVID, but they've been vaccinated, they've been boosted, and they might have mild to no symptoms. And I think that that's kind of the difference. And it's also younger people that are being impacted. Before, we seemed to have a population of 65 and older that were really the more critical people, and we're seeing younger people getting sicker, but it's not lasting as long.
Liz, are you on the line with us?
I am.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. So this is Liz Bacom. She is the Infection Prevention Manager with PMC. Have you been listening to a conversation?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I just would like to add that the antigen testing is great. If you have symptoms and it's positive, you can pretty much rely on that result and isolate as soon as you see that double line on that strip. And hopefully you'll call PMC and get some medical guidance, especially people who have underlying medical conditions that put them at higher risk for serious COVID infection. And I just also want to say that the average age of the people who have tested positive in January is 30. So I've got over 100 people who tested positive in January, and the average age is 30 years of age. So it's running the gamut from, you know, under a year of age and older. So it's not just the illness of the elders, and Omicron is very infectious. It can be transmitted very easily and quickly goes through households. So if one person in the household tests positive, even if people are vaccinated, if they're not distancing and doing good hand hygiene, and it is not unusual to see other people in the household test positive. And testing positive on a home antigen test doesn't necessarily need to be confirmed. However, if you plan on traveling in the next couple of months and would require a negative PCR test, then you ideally would want to get a confirmation test when you had your positive antigen test so that it's documented as to when your PCR was positive. I've heard of people testing positive later and getting stuck somewhere traveling because they didn't have a proof of infection from earlier.
Okay, so let me just get this straight. Let's say I go home tonight and my nose starts running and I test, and wow, look at that. I'm positive. Do I need to, does everybody need, so do people need to call their doctor at PMC if they're positive or just stay
home? We appreciate the call just so that we can get it in your record. You don't need to be followed up. But if you have serious complications later, then we can document that you did have an antigen test that was positive. If you're really uncomfortable and you don't want to deal with the hospital system at all, I understand that too, especially if you know what you've got. You've had other people in the house test positive, and you don't need to have another test, and you can report anonymously. And I'll get into that in just a second. But if you do have, especially kids, the concern that we have is young children under the age of 15 who get a very mild case of COVID, they test positive or they don't get a test at all, and then they recover fine. And then 4 weeks later, it hits in a different way. It presents differently. And the virus, what it does is it, in some children, their immune system sort of gets overwhelmed, and they have this, it's a inflammatory condition that can put children at, you know, serious risk, and they may need hospitalization and supportive treatment. And we've had a few cases in Alaska. There was a case in Sitka recently that was out there on social media, and it was pretty heartbreaking to see, you know, little tiny kids getting having this a sequela, this outcome that creates much more need for higher level of care, and the kids have to be medevaced. It's quite serious. So especially parents with kids, even if you don't want to get your kid tested again, if you let us know, we'll put it in the record that the child tested positive. We can track that. If the child comes back into the ER with some unusual symptoms, and sometimes it's something really off the wall, like sudden diarrhea and a sudden fever with no other reason, you know, but for about 4 weeks after an infection with COVID, these symptoms can come up and it can be quite serious. So we don't want to see that happen to any more kids in Southeast.
That's really interesting to think about, because I kind of get the sense some people are relieved, you know, after they have COVID, then they're like, whew, I'm immune for 90 days and kind of this just real relief as well. If they have their sense of smell and taste, they're relieved. But knowing that, you know, there could be symptoms happening a month out that could be related back to COVID.
Yeah. And then also long COVID, we're learning a little bit more about that as we go. And, you know, some people have difficulty breathing for weeks or months afterwards. They have trouble with exertion. They're exhausted. They have ongoing body aches. There's other things that go on. And so, you know, if you have those kinds of things and you're recovered from COVID, you should follow up with your provider and see if there's something that we can do for you to help alleviate that.
How often should people test if they're at home? Say they have symptoms, but they're, you know, they tested and it's negative. Should they just say I'm good, or should they be testing every day, say if they have these kind of cold or flu symptoms?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. So if you have symptoms, a runny nose, a scratchy throat, and your antigen test is negative, you should still test again the next day or 2 days later and verify that it is. And two tests increases the sensitivity, and three tests is much greater. That was discussed on one of the state echoes, that the first negative test maybe give you 60% reliability. A second negative 2 days later gives you about 80%, and a third negative rapid antigen test, you know, on day six or so would give you about a 90% of confidence. But the other thing, unfortunately, humans don't get just COVID this time of year. They get flu, they get RSV, they get, you know, just the common cold. So there's other things that are going on. And if you feel crappy and it's been 3 or 4 days and you still test negative, you may have something else. So it is worthwhile, you know, getting tested to make sure it isn't something else that you could spread around in the community. And I just want to say one more thing about mild to moderate infection. When people get sick with COVID and they go, oh, it's just mild to moderate, consider moderate to be a really bad case of the flu. You're in bed for 4 to 7 days. You feel awful. That's moderate. Serious is when you go to the hospital. So it isn't something that you can laugh off and go, oh, it's just a cold. It's just the flu. if it's truly going to put you in the hospital, that's not mild or moderate anymore. So moderate can be pretty uncomfortable, and still you can manage it with over-the-counters, rest, and lots of good hydration. But it can flip the wrong direction, so it's really important to keep in touch with the healthcare team at the hospital to make sure that your pulse is, oxygen is good, and you know you're not running really high fevers and that kind of stuff. So,
okay. And there are a few different home test kits floating around out there. Are they all the same accuracy?
I haven't seen any comparison between one or the other. But if you want to order a test kit online, you can go to COVID tests. That's with an S at the end. .gov, and you can click on that link, and you can order up to 4. Home antigen test kits. I'm not exactly sure which ones they're sending, but you can get 4 home antigen tests per household. And I know there was some question about businesses, people who have a business PO box that want to be able to order a kit, but they can't because they share it with their house. But I think they've got a workaround for that. So, but yeah, you can order those. We're going to have them in town as long as we can get them from the state. We're going to keep providing them. Because I think the reason we've done so well in Petersburg, we have just gotten, you know, people really want to know, and they do the right thing and test and stay home and notify their close contacts. And I think continuing that is really going to make this community stronger.
Okay. Thanks, Liz, for that information. Should we jump into Cerner and get an update on that? This is the so people might notice the if they go to their patient portal, just online, PMC online is a little bit different with record keeping, correct?
Yes. So on December 6th, we switched over to a completely new electronic health record, which helps support every department in our hospital. And previous to that, we had an electronic health record called CPSI. So your records will be in your patient portal for CPSI from December 5th previous. And you can still access that with the username and password the community's used to. From December 6th forward, we have a new patient portal through Cerner, which is called Healthy Life. It also has its own application. Like if you have an iPhone, you can search for Healthy Life and download the application, which is actually really useful. I've been using it on my phone and really like it. And you can access your lab results, radiology results, physician documentation, everything that is you as a patient, and get that information pretty quickly. Like as soon as things are resulted or available, it'll appear in your portal. We have patients that have given feedback to us just that it's been really helpful as they're seeing specialists. They can go down, pull it up on their phone, show their specialists things that they've had here in Petersburg, as well as the records we're sending down, but it's nice to just have it there in person. And we've had some pretty positive feedback. We're continuing to develop it. And so one of the things that we're moving towards are automatic reminders for appointments that our patients have, specifically in like the clinic or lab or radiology. And patients are receiving either text message or a phone call that's automated reminding them of their messaging. We're working out some of the kinks in that. So just keep in mind, and we're putting out some PSAs also to the community, but there is an option to cancel or reschedule, and those are going into what we call a pool to our staff in the clinic, and we're working out some of the bugs with getting those cancellations or reschedules called back to the patient, and actually working through the process for the time being, if it's not just a clear yep, I'm going to keep my appointment, thank you for the reminder, and you want to make a change, please call the clinic, and that's 772-4299 to make those changes. But in the future, hopefully we'll work all that out so that those reminders go through and we can communicate back and forth. But the portal is new, to answer your question, and we've been receiving good feedback. It's a lot more user-friendly than I think the one that we had before. But Cerner as a whole, like any new technology, our staff are learning it and adapting it to their everyday work life. We've found that it is much more efficient, and that we're able to communicate department to department better than we used to be able to. And so it's been a good change.
It kind of seems like a lot of technology, it's more efficient, but there can be some growing pains. How's home health feeling about the new system?
So we really like it. And one of the things that it allows is for the nurses to be more mobile. So we can actually take an iPad into a patient home and document at point of care, look up things for the patient if they have questions. So that's been really, really nice and really helpful. We're not lugging around big laptops anymore, just a nice small iPad. The technology is great. The ability to do a really thorough assessment and document it in a way that you don't feel like you're writing for hours and hours. It's expedited work for us. I mean, it's really, we've had our bumps as well, just because it's a new system and everybody's learning new things. But it's we can't say enough about it. We're very happy with it.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds like it's a, I mean, the idea that people could be get reminders of their appointments and then digitally change that in the future sounds pretty cool.
Yep, we're excited for that to work out. Yes, in the near future.
All right, anything else that we want to touch on today that we haven't touched on yet? Anything you wanted to add about home health?
So just a couple of things about home health. As always, we are available to anybody in the community that might be homebound or unable to get out to the hospital. You know, just not because you don't feel like it, but if there's a medical reason, we will be more than happy to come and meet with you. And if the doctor refers you to provide care, we are looking at expanding some service lines. I'm really excited about the possibility of a caregiving program, which would allow people to hire staff for a few hours a day to provide in-home care, because home health isn't really able to do that under Medicare, Medicaid guidelines. We could do it, but it would be ridiculously expensive. So we're in the very early stages of looking at providing this service. So we would love feedback, you know, and if people have questions or they want to stop in the home health office or they have a comment about this kind of service, we're welcome. We're open and welcoming that. You know, we're just looking to be really collaborative and provide the best care we can here for the Petersburg community.
So what kind of care? Can you give examples of that kind of care?
Sure. So there's a really big need for the people who are sort of in between needing hospitalization and home care, but really just might need someone to come in and help with dishes and laundry and some homemaking services. Maybe they just need some companionship a few hours a day. I foresee it as being an opportunity to provide some respite for permanent caregivers who might just need a few hours to run to the grocery store, but they can't leave their loved one home alone. And it just seems like they're, you know, we're limited in what we have available here. And so it's something that's been really kind of near and dear to me. And I just foresee speaking to people and hearing what the need is and wishing I could say, oh, home health is going to provide 24-hour care. We cannot do that. So we started this process of looking into the possibility of creating something a little bit different.
And so this would be kind of like privately funded through patients, not through Medicaid and Medicare.
That is correct. Yeah. So okay. We're looking at initially, I think it would be a private pay service, but a really affordable private pay service. But again, we're still just really at the very beginning stages of it, looking at applications, looking at what we would need to do to create this. And again, any community feedback is welcome because we're just really looking to see how we can benefit everybody.
I bet a few hours a day can make a huge difference for some households.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Jill, anything else you wanted to add?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, we have gotten through this project and I'm sure we'll have new ones in the future if Phil has anything to say about it, but we're doing well. Yeah, thank you for asking.
And Phil.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the main things is just keep moving forward and trying to adjust finding places and where we have gaps and needs and providing services. And I think that we have a great team to be able to do that. And, you know, not everything's about COVID and Omicron. I know a lot of folks are really tired about that. But, you know, we have to continue providing safety and care in the community as much as possible. And we're constantly evolving and always challenging the staff to be as flexible and as progressive as possible. So. Thank you. I just want a huge thank you to all staff on really stepping up in this time. So, thank you.
All right. Well, this wraps up our monthly edition of PMC Live. Thank you to our guests. We have Phil Hofstetter, Kirsten Testoni, Jill Dormer, and Liz Bacom joined us on the phone. If you missed some of the show, we will be posting the whole thing on our website, kfsk.org. PMC Live airs the first Thursday of every month.